Welcome back to Bluegrass Bios on WLXU LPFM Lexington Community Radio. Thank you for I can't read today. I don't know what's wrong with me. I need to stop reading this stuff or writing it. I don't know. I'm having a short radio breakdown on the air today. Thank you for tuning in, is what I was trying to say. We're on 93.9 FM. I'm sorry. I don't know why I'm yelling at you. You can also stream the show if you like being yelled at LexingtonCommunityRadio.org. If you're just joining us, we had on Celeste Lewis from the County Parks and Recreation Department and the Moondance Amphitheater. So this is sort of these middle segments are going to be in the future, kind of a more focused on news to some extent, I think.
Okay.
What do you guys think
like
about
that? I like it.
So we started with some Olympic talk. I am not particularly well versed. I feel like there's been a lot of conversation on mainstream sports radio recently about how there's kind of a dichotomy between mainstream sports fans and the Olympics, and mm-hmm. Ben, you seem to break that mold a little bit. You're all about mm-hmm. this stuff.
Oh yeah.
It's just like a weird thing. Yeah, is it like the pageantry and the
Well, I think it's the coverage is excellent, number one. So you've got at least five different cable channels I can flip between sports. I don't get to see these sports very often. Mm-hmm. I'm learning the rules of rugby,
yeah,
which is fun. That's probably my favorite part of it, is finding a sport I didn't realize I enjoyed and then realize, oh, I gotta learn the rules for this. I got to find out what offsides is in field hockey. If it even exists.
Huh, that's interesting. So you're watching from a gamesman point of view?
I am looking for more things to get into often when I'm watching the Olympics. I didn't realize I liked
personally?
Archery.
Yeah.
I watched judo the other day.
Yeah, I watched
judo.
A little judo. Yeah,
and it was really weird, but I watched it.
Huh. It was cool. You could kind of pick it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the rugby matches, the only problem I have is they're short. They're so short. So you saw a lot of one-score games.
I like late night rugby is one of my guilty pleasures.
Yeah. Really?
Oh, so you catch like the live Aussie rules football stuff?
Yeah.
Rugby?
I mean, I have no idea what's going on.
It's on at like 3 in the morning?
Yeah.
Because it's live from. That's great.
Yeah. I feel like you're the people that would subscribe to ESPN 8, the Ocho from Dodgeball, right? Like this.
Yeah, yeah. Or at least hop online and see what's.
That's, you know,
in the middle of the night, I can't get back to sleep. I wake up at like 4. Maybe cricket's on.
Yeah.
And I'll try to pick up what's going on.
Right. It's like
weird
and baseball. I don't understand it.
Yeah, they have
but
the cricket matches that last like a week.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, there's no time limit on them.
No,
right?
No.
Yeah. Lexington, I guess here's the, if we can take this into a different direction, because mm-hmm. I'm very much, I can actually, now that you're saying it, Ben, mm-hmm. I can appreciate the point of view that you're coming from. You're in it because you have curiosity of just what people are doing with their lives. And it is interesting that people are dedicating their lives to this thing that you really only think about once every 4 years.
And so maybe if swimming was on, like at least once a year, they had a World Series of swimming.
Sure.
I wouldn't be as into the Olympic stuff as I am. And I wanted to mention, we had a tie the other night, and I did the math on it. So they have cameras that run at 120 frames per second.
Okay.
And they tied down to the frame.
Wow.
So if there was a difference.
This is swimming,
100 meters. If somebody actually won that race, they beat the other person by 0.004% of 1 second. If
wow.
there was, in fact, a winner.
And then you have
that's
to consider
how fast
the odds
cameras
of all
are
that, right? Because
yeah,
how
yeah.
many people are in the pool? Like
at least eight.
Eight.
Yeah.
The other side of this Olympics has been a focus on the venue itself, right? Mm-hmm. Brazil, particularly Rio.
There's been a lot of pressure in the news. And I think it happens before every Olympics. Oh, they're not ready yet.
Well, not when it's held in Atlanta, you know. I know in Sochi it was a lot the same kind of conversation.
Right. But I think the you know, organization, Rio, has done well.
They've done pretty well. There's a couple of things here and there, but we expected it to just be a horror show,
right,
I think,
right,
going in, of disease and violence.
Right,
and
you know, the news said Zika was going to, you know, right, impair right, all the athletes, and the water was just horrible.
And as far as I can tell, just the divers, they had that really gross green...
Right.
Looking pool that they were diving into, and I just thought
That Zika remains a risk.
Right, and it's becoming even more of a risk as mosquitoes move north. So it's not really a Brazil thing, it's kind of a
I mean, look, you could say
thing.
That it ended up being like a red herring, but the reality is, like, this is not, we're not going to know until the end of this, right? How
right.
it's affected, you know, primarily female athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it'll end up affecting females, right? Because from what I understand, the main issue or malady, if you will, that comes out of the Zika virus is a fetal defect, right,
mm-hmm.
from giving yeah. birth. So, I mean, have we noticed any signs of it yet? No,
nope.
But we're not gonna for a while either.
Yeah,
and as far as the safety of it there was an article on the front page of the Herald today that was actually from, I don't have the name of the reporter on there, but he's a correspondent for the New York Times. So he has the resources to kind of go down there mm-hmm. and poke around. And from what he was explaining, yes, within the Olympic Village, around all of the stadiums, mm-hmm. it is incredibly safe, right?
Right.
But if you go a block in any direction, I mean, we talk about crime. I mean, this is this is serious. We're talking about gangs of children coming out of favelas that are just pick your pockets, cab mm-hmm. drivers who will try to swindle you, all this kind of stuff. Maybe a lot of this goes along with you know, just an influx of tourists kind of thing, that these stories would be more prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
But it is strange to me that we pick these highly impoverished places for these world games mm-hmm. when I think that it's mostly been debunked at this point that there's not a great influx of money at the end of all these things.
Absolutely,
like, it's not,
not.
Like
if
there's
anything,
a stimulus package.
They lose money.
It ends up being worse than
the Olympics. Every city that hosts the Olympics loses money on it.
Yeah, so what is it's visibility, I
visibility
guess, just...
and promotion, and
well, somebody's
we
getting money, right? And they...
construction, a lot of construction work.
One aspect of that is that promotion idea, and Rio has capitalized in a lot of ways on favela tourism. So
I like how you put some stank on that one.
Yeah, well,
you've done some studying about Rio, right?
Right. I've taken classes on the history of Brazil, and one of my classmates wrote her final paper on the idea of tourism and that people are going to favelas and going to poorer regions and poorer communities to see how the other side lives and to see poverty.
That is very strange.
Right.
It's a little hipstery.
It's a little, a lot of things. But I think watching the opening ceremony,
mm-hmm.
I mean, favelas are obviously a part of Rio and a part of the culture. And that can be translated to a lot of cultures, is that there's poor neighborhoods, obviously. But that's something I think that's going to come of the games, is that people are going to see favelas and see favela tourism and want to go see how the other side lives. And so Rio may be losing money, but I think mm-hmm. tourism will skyrocket.
Okay. I see what you're saying there. I don't quite understand the allure of going to see a bunch of
I don't know either, but it's a thing.
Sheet metal.
But well,
as some of the problem is it's so poor there that and this has been in the news quite a bit lately, the police aren't even getting paid there. So you have a serious security issue mm-hmm. when your police aren't motivated to stop crime. So as far as tourism goes, I'll go to Cancun. I wanted to initially talk about some academia stuff because the other half of the first page of the paper lately has been just school starting generally. And it occurred to me that Lexington is especially affected by back to school time.
Right? Me, Lexington?
Well, yeah, you too. Okay. You too, but yeah, it works both ways.
Okay.
But because of the size of the town, UK being the primary employer for the county, mm-hmm. when you consider faculty, staff, support staff, and
medical.
The entire hospital, system. There are a lot of people also coming into town. As well, students returning, which has a big effect on hospitality businesses, both mm-hmm. customers and et cetera. So I wanted to use this opportunity to maybe explore Ben. There's something that that I've been wanting to ask you about for a while. Mm. I want to get you on record, sir. there's something that you've said that's been a little bit of a thorn in my paw, if you will, for a while.
I do that.
That you've said to Lexington and I mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. how important mm-hmm. it is to stay in school for as long as humanly possible. Mm-hmm. I misunderstood what you were saying, but if you could explain what you mean by that and why.
Well, what I meant was that for the most part, the number one reason to stay in school as long as possible is it increases your earning potential probably fourfold.
Yeah, that's
at least.
That's
at least
just
fourfold.
Pretty basic kind of statistics mm-hmm. there, right?
But in ways you might not expect. So if you go to a job, an entry-level position at, say, a big company, your wage to start will be significantly lower than your wage to start if you have a bachelor's degree. And that will be lower than your starting wage if you have a master's degree. And that just seems to be how it works.
You're doing
the exact same job.
I mean, look, there's a problem that I have with that to some degree, where, you know, at what point, and I know, like, this is kind of going off into left field, but at what point is this any different from, like, men versus women getting paid differently for doing the same job, right? If you're performing the same function, now, look, here's what would be reasonable to me.
Mm-hmm.
If you are the higher educated individual in this scenario of mm-hmm. the two, mm-hmm. then your productivity mm-hmm. should reflect that, right? You would get promoted more quickly, your pay would be commensurate with that, right?
Mm-hmm.
I do not tend to find a direct correlation between education, credentials, and ability to perform work. In fact, in some cases, I would say that it's the inverse.
In some cases, if you have a job you feel is beneath you and beneath your education, then yeah, absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah.
And so now that person is getting $8 more an hour. The other problem with some of these, you know, you say it's easy to say to throw out the fourfold. A lot of these times, these statistics are based off of, they're not per industry. You know what I mean? Like, it's across mm-hmm. a wide spectrum, which, mm-hmm. you know, throws in a lot of, yeah, of course, if you're working in the, you know, if you're an engineer, right, mm-hmm. who's gone to school for 8 years, you're going to make more. All right, well, we'll pick this up at the end of the show. We've got a very special guest that's about to come on with us. Calling in from the West Coast, Crack.com's Michael Swaim will be on. We're for a much anticipated interview. So Ben is going to put him on hold right now. And we're going to put on some music to get our bearings. Stay tuned and see if I geek out. This is Bluegrass Bios on Lexington Community Radio. Welcome back to Bluegrass Bios on Lexington Community Radio. Our next guest is the senior video creator at Los Angeles humor website, crack.com. And if you're wondering why he's on with us today, it's because I've been a fan of the site and his work for nearly a decade. And when I reached out to him for an interview, he was kind enough to agree. Mm-hmm. So let's put it this way. If I had the choice between the mayor and Louis C.K., I'd dump Jim Gray faster than Matt Damon on Jimmy Kimmel, if anyone understands that joke. Anyway, without any further ado, Cracked Michael Swaim, everybody.
Howdy, howdy, howdy. And let me get off on the right foot by saying, no, I did not understand that joke.
You didn't understand the Matt Damon, Jimmy Kimmel joke? Well, humor is your business, and I'll leave it to you. How's that sound?
No. No, I think the point I want to drive home is that most of the time, despite what I try to put out with my online persona, I don't know what people are talking about, and I'm not caught up on references. Like, I just gave notes on a script last night and was like, this is really unclear. This needs to be a reference to something in the zeitgeist right now. Like, this is just waste of space if it's not a joke. And then I went home that night and watched the first episode of Stranger Things on Netflix. Writer and be like, that was clearly all about Stranger Things, and screw me, I'm sorry. Really good reference.
Well, that's ahead of the curve. I love Stranger Things personally.
We're only on episode 3, but I'm enjoying it very much.
Well, you told us before you came on that that you know, you either are working basically 100-hour works or you're playing paper football over there at the office. How difficult is it to stay on the popular culture pulse when you have so much to do now and there's so much of it?
Yeah, it is a bit overwhelming, and I kind of think of at least the Cracked writer pool as sort of a comedy A-team in the sense that, or to be nerdier, like your high school academic league team, of which I was the captain. Thank you very much. I'm our super expert, or that old Comedy Central show, Beat the Nerds. I'm our nerd several topics. And, if Pokemon comes up, I'm not a Pokemon nerd, but I've taken the time to understand enough about it to make jokes about it that make it seem like I know what I'm talking about. And so Dan O'Brien will get something that involves Pokemon and go, like, what do I do about this? And vice versa with, like, American history is clearly his purview, as he's released a couple books on the topic. We all just kind of try and carve it up. But our only response, and I don't know if this is the right one, time will tell, to, like, the too many shows phenomena is we've hired more writers. And we just literally have more people trying to watch everything so that we're all keeping abreast of it.
Like,
I always wonder how The Daily Show did it. Because they could, like, find footage that you wonder, how the heck did they find that so fast 25 years ago?
I think in their circumstance, they had several DVRs running simultaneously. Yep. Like, you could tell the day that the DVR became a thing if you watch old episodes of that show. And there are, like, media services also that I think do stuff like that for you, too. But that's
just
cheating.
Just immediately took it to the next level, yeah.
Yeah.
This is Lexington, what is that creative process like working with so many different writers? How do you all kind of fit it together to create a cohesive script or a cohesive piece?
Well, it's changed. There's been phases, I guess I'd say, because, let's see, I've been at Crack for now, I think, 8 years working with Crack heavily, and ever since I graduated college. And we've also sort of taken turns being the head of the video department at different times. It was me at one time, it's Dan O'Brien now. And so the management style, like, in the room, of course, will sort of reflect the style of whoever's, like, turn it is on the Iron Throne, I guess. Mentality that is not there. It's more like, and this is a true story, like, someone will say the stress of being the manager is making it so that, like, I went blind in my right eye and I went to the doctor and they said it's because of this job, so can you switch with me? We'll do stuff like that. But so yeah, it's kind of like that, and then equal parts chaos, I guess. But friendly chaos, because it is really what you would imagine to be a writer's room. Everyone sort of just shouting out their idea. Everyone really respects each other and each other's senses of humor, and the idea of getting a diverse, you know, sort of genetic diversity, a lot of different senses of humor in your product, if you're trying to get it to a wide audience and hit with a wide audience, it makes sense that you sort of want to listen to everyone at the table a little bit if you can. And, of course, we like to think we only hire people who say funny stuff, and so we're open to everything, and it just sort of hashes itself out, which does mean that we will, like, spend 6 hours having a discussion that results in a 3-minute video, and you'll look back and be like, was that really necessary? I don't know, but it was fun. And we arrived at a video we all really like. So that's sort of our tactic. Handcrafted, old style.
And you guys don't have like a standards and practices thing you have to meet, do you?
Well, and I think this is something fun is the way of saying frustrating about working on, you know, a frontier media. Like, you know, being involved heavily in internet media sort of as it's figuring itself out, is it's developed. It changes year by year. And when we started, we did not think about it. That would be disingenuous to say. But we assumed we would get away with whatever we wanted. And we did. And then about 2009, we started getting cease and desist letters from various entities and being like, oh, okay. So copyright law is a thing now. Everyone heard the Girl Talk album and was pissed off they didn't get paid.
Oh,
and so now we live in that world.
Oh, yeah. The sampling album, for people who don't know, the guy samples a lot of other work. So it wasn't being offensive or language. It was copyright and maybe ticking off the wrong person or the wrong company, hurting the wrong person's feelings, maybe?
Yeah, well, thing, because we also, I think, live in a time where society is renegotiating what's offensive and what's PC, and I don't want to get into it, but everyone's line's different, and it seems like, at least on the internet, a hot topic of conversation, and we're sort of like renegotiating that as a society. So we, on the crack team, like, the offensiveness part is a legitimate concern to us, and my working theory is that humor, because it's happened to me and I can see it in action, humor can undercut something. Like, you can be as offensive as you want. Mm-hmm. If it's satirical or if it's couched in, like, a humorous way that makes sense or an interesting point or is so freaking funny that I, like, forgive you in the moment. And then if you don't nail the joke, it's sort of like, you know, yeah, the trapeze artist just falling. But if you don't nail the joke and the joke is based on something edgy, we sort of self-censor or are negotiating ourselves, like, what's problematic and what blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, from the external world, the main, basically, thing shouting at you is, do not take my copyrighted property. That is the number one concern, absolutely. So, like, I think we had an issue recently with the Hollywood sign is on a decorative image in our office, so it appears incidentally in the background of a video, and apparently the Hollywood sign itself is a copyrighted image.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So the sign equivalent of Happy Birthday, maybe.
Right, exactly, yeah. Although I heard that just became public domain not too long ago.
Oh, wow.
Right.
Oh, that's big news.
Yeah, I won't flaunt the gods by singing it, but I think that's true.
Michael Swaim of Crack.com on with us. Michael, if we could go back a little bit, you're a San Diego guy who came up by filming sketches for UCSD's satirical Mirror Quarterly and then putting them on the internet. Humble beginnings. Does it still feel surreal to have such a long reach and a loyal following?
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, yeah, surreal is my go-to word, so I don't know what to say besides surreal. But, yeah, very much so. And it's sort of, unnerving to me. Like, I don't know if I take to it. I'm hoping in the coming years I'll sort of fade into a writer, editor, producer role. Because honestly, it's surreal and strange to me when someone like recognizes me on the street. I'm extremely humbled and flattered and all that, but also super awkward. I'm closer to what Dan O'Brien, if you're a crack fan, presents as his persona than what the Michael Swain persona is in real life.
Well, I've heard you on the Cracked podcast, which you appear on frequently, and you perform live shows also at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater. And it was either you or Dan or Soren that pointed out how different it was walking out of a packed venue full of fans to the Sunset Boulevard sidewalk where no one recognizes you. So I guess my question is, at this point in your career, is it more appealing to be a small fish in a big pond with relative anonymity, or would you trade creative control for a network deal and more cameras?
All I can say is the truth, and it will sound like such a canned response, but it's true for me. I really got into this because I'm obsessed with, in my case, story structure, the English language, and like the tricks that it can pull off, and the way that humor can get basically brainwashing, or can like amplify your message and shape culture as it marches into the future. And so I just want to play in the sandbox and build cool stuff. And unfortunately, the medium that just calls out to me is film and television. So that's always the goal. Or, I mean, I don't differentiate between that and new media, but I would like to see the scope get bigger, just simply because I've been doing 3 to 11 minute stuff for 8 years. I feel like I'm ready for 22 minutes to 2 hours. And that's basically the goal now. And that, I mean, could still happen at Crack. That's what's great about the net, is it's one size fits all. But yeah, I just want to keep seeing the projects get bigger, which unfortunately does mean you have to achieve some amount of power in Hollywood, because that equates to the budget that you need to make that thing. But that is my only interest. It's about the music, man.
But Cracked trades in viral media consumption, right? So
absolutely.
Articles and videos that gain traction for our older crowd. Videos that gain traction through
viral, man.
Is that Zika? As a comedian, is there then a dilemma between sticking to your creative sensibilities and producing content for mass consumption?
Not too much. And that's only because I think it's a really good fit, in the sense that, like, my dad sat me down when the first episode of The Simpsons aired on TV and said, "You guys have to watch this. This is going to be the most important show of your time." I still don't know how he knew that, episode one. But,
oh, wow.
That is pretty wise.
Ryan was pretty good. But, yeah, it's all people who legitimately are watching the shows and movies anyway, and reading the comic books anyway, and having the discussions in after hours anyway. So, like I said, sometimes because a job is a job, we'll have to stretch outside our comfort zone, because we will realize Pokemon Go is the thing. We release 10 pieces of content a day. Something has to be about Pokemon Go. We're all over 20, so we don't know about Pokemon Go. So someone goes and wanders around the office with Pokemon Go out thinking of jokes and gets paid to do that.
Oh, wow.
So it's a mix.
Michael Swaim of Crack.com on with us. When we were getting this interview together, you told me that your company title is manager, content. But you still think of yourself as a writer first. So my question is, where do you get your ideas from? No, I'm totally kidding. I'm totally kidding. That's one of those if you have to ask kind of questions, right? I have a
PO box. You have a correct.
My question relates to some of your creative work specifically.
Sure.
I think it's fair to say that your web series After Hours in which you, Dan O'Brien, Soren Bowie, and Katie Willert portray hyperbolic versions of yourselves to overanalyze the minutiae of pop culture. It's one of the keystones of Cracked at this point. And
for sure, certainly Cracked video, yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily say that there are a lot of imitators, but this nerd culture is kind of a burgeoning genre. When you're writing an episode, is there ever a fear of being trite, or are your characters so well established that the subject matter is almost ancillary to the punchlines?
Well, first of all, everything's imitation, just in the sense that After Hours certainly comes from basically the, you know, Quentin Tarantino Reservoir Dogs scenes.
Sure.
And mixed with Diner and Seinfeld. So everything I feel like just exists in the sort of continuity of your version of the idea. And that's how I steal ideas and rationalize it to myself. But to the other part of your question, yeah, it still feels genuine, at least so far. And I think that's because every episode is born out of a legitimate conversation. So what we'll do is, and it's more than just the four people you see, obviously, it's sort of the whole crack team, but we will actually talk about the topic of the day, let's say Ghostbusters, for 3 hours, and everyone's a comedian writer trying to make a name for themselves in the writer's room and being paid to do so. So everyone hopefully says like says insightful, funny things. And we basically just write it all down and then chop it up and condense it into a formal argument. And that's After Hours. And the characters are sort of conceived basically as four sort of broad philosophies, I guess you'd say. And then we see, you know, so we found that we can fit every argument into four basic nerd archetypes. And so that's our four folks, and we just let them have at it. And it's fun. It's fun as a writer if you're the kind of writer who likes writing essays, because it's sort of just like a logical argument show, but about your favorite topics, you know, so it never gets old. And I should point out that we have a lot of fresh blood coming in. As I said, we're always expanding the team, and we have a lot of great new writers. David Bell, Carmen Angelica, Alex Schmidt all started submitting scripts recently, and they're all fabulous.
You mentioned everybody's kind of in that writer's room trying to make a name for themselves. What do you do when one of you isn't funny?
Yeah, does everyone just walk out?
Well, everyone's not funny a proportion of the time, right. And that's something you quickly learn is that you all trust each other and you're not here. I mean, you know, it's a magic trick, like stepping out on stage or presenting any performed piece,
right.
Other than, I guess, improv, and my hat is off to them. But it's the editorial process that makes it seem like magic, that makes you seem funnier and more clever than you are. So certainly everyone is encouraged to throw out everything that comes across their minds, that comes to mind, rather, and we'll find the funny ones as a group, and it's going to be okay, you know, we'll all get through this together. And as far as someone, like, intrinsically not being funny, which sure is absolutely a thing, but Cracks has neatly avoided that by basically having an incredibly small staff. We've always been really, like low head count versus output compared to our peers. And that's because it's grown really, really organically. So the video department, at least, which is what I can primarily speak for, started as basically Cracked acquiring Abe Epperson and my sketch troupe, Those Are Muskets, basically just outright. So at first the Cracked video department was Those Are Muskets. We reached out to other people who were doing sketch at the time that we really admired and built it from there, and everyone who's on staff now is like a friend of a member of that group, and then a friend of that friend, and so on. Or someone that came to our attention because we just started posting their videos, like Cody Johnson, who's now essentially, I think, at the core of the site. But there was a time in ancient history before he was there, and we were just watching this guy's videos from Ohio and loving them. but we sit on it for a long time because we want to make sure they're funny and we want to make sure that they have basically an inexhaustible supply of ideas. And then we go, okay, well, let's offer him a job. And Cody just moved out, and now he's Cody Johnson.
That's really cool. Michael, what can you tell me about sort of the history of Cracked itself? Where did it come from? How did it start?
Well, I can only really speak to our iteration.
Oh, sure.
It's sort of like Lord of the Rings. I can't talk about Lord of the Rings because someone will...
There's a mythology?
Yeah, exactly. I'm going into the Silmarillion now. But there's a total disconnect, or like a Dark Ages period, just meaning that Cracked, a lot of people remember Cracked as the Pepsi to Mad Magazine's Coke.
Right.
Yeah.
Or the Go-Bots, if you will. And that certainly was a thing. And then it went away. And then Cracked was relaunched many years later, basically by a completely different set of human beings in a different time with different goals. So I can't speak to the brand sort of before the great rifting, I call it. But since it was relaunched, basically, it was launched right on the cusp of the internet owning all other forms of media. So it was relaunched as a print magazine for 3 issues. And then we were like, no, oh boy, that's not the way to go. And it immediately became a website and has done boffo box office since then. But basically, the way the format of the site came about is totally the vision of Jack O'Brien, the editor-in-chief, who sort of, I mean, internally sometimes we'll call it paying too much attention to stuff that doesn't deserve it, or comedy with a college education, because college humor is copywritten. But the idea just to, A, that a list format, which incidentally is some kind of like thing that's hardwired into the human brain to be popular, the list format is not limiting. You can write about anything in that format with a few simple tricks. So he realized that, A, and he realized, B, that a lot of sites out there exist that try to hit your nostalgia center, but not a lot of them have, I guess, the meat to back it up. And with a little more work and a little more time spent researching by the types of writers who liked writing essays in school, you can make it sort of a hybrid experience where you're laughing at fart jokes, but you also learn something new and interesting to say at the next party you go to. And that's sort of the goal of every piece of Cracked content. Other than the ones they let me write, which just become pure narrative. All the I would say 90% of Cracked content, the goal is sort of to laugh and learn.
And it's reader generated, which is important. Anyone can go out there and pitch an idea for an article.
Absolutely, and they're always looking for new writers. And as I said, it's sort of it's a slow process, but I mean, at this point, I've seen it happen dozens and dozens of times. And where we have many, many readers who are now our most popular columnists, and, you know, like, who post every week and have a huge following. So, yeah, definitely. We're very reliant on the reader base.
So, Jack
O'Brien, into writers.
Michael,
Pokemon Go reference.
Michael Swaim from Cracked.com with us. Jack O'Brien, he came to you guys when it started in 2005. You know, he came from what? From ABC News, right? Some sort of a large operation. Is that right?
Wow. You're better man than I.
Yeah, I believe it's ABC News.
Operation, and I have prepared funny anecdotes about that. It's necessary, but I don't know if it's ABC for sure, but yeah.
Well, that might be apocryphal, but I'm throwing that out there. but I've heard him say on a podcast also that, you know, at first it was kind of austere over there getting things off the ground. And then when he did slowly, and I can't remember the name of your media company actually, but when he had the opportunity to hire more people, he kept hiring more and more writers instead of, you know, like accountants or lawyers, stuff like that. What were those first few years like for you when you got on in 2007? Were we barely keeping the lights on over there, or did you have a lot of support out the gate?
Well, the very first couple of years, I can't actually speak to because it was bare bones to the point that there was not a video department, so I don't exist at that point. But basically, for the first couple of years, my pals and I at UCSD are making sketches. Just because everyone was, like, that was the thing to do at the time, was to become a sketch troupe online, and selling those to crack so that they had some video content. But it took about, I think, 2 years for them to get the resources built up to the point where they asked, if, you know, do you think you could become, sign this piece of paper here and become a full-time employee and be, like, our video department. And that, since then, the resources, yes, have expanded.
Because you were doing four people's jobs.
Logarithmically, certainly.
You were doing four or five jobs basically right off the bat when you got there, right?
Yeah, we had a series called Agents of Crack back in the day. And on that show, I was basically writer, actor, co-editor, and grip. So we would, I'd be in wacky costumes and we'd cut, and Dan O'Brien and I would move all of the lights and C-stands around, basically being directed by the cameraman, Abe Epperson, who's also the director and co-editor and writer. and then, you know, like you'd imagine, basic bare bones, and the show takes place in the office because that's the location we can secure, et cetera, et cetera. So as bare bones as you can be. And what I think is fun about crack is we love that, and we love that do-it-yourself sort of background, and we all come from that background thanks to growing up in the Internet age. And so we keep a healthy mix of that, by which I mean our resources have expanded, certainly. So now we'll do, like, you know, high-budget sci-fi series that everyone's super excited about for months, and it's really satisfying to see realized. But at the same time, we're constantly still doing stuff shot guerrilla style that costs $50. Because why not? If you can make cool content that people like for $50 because you know how to do that, that should be part of your arsenal. And so we've just sort of basically expanded our repertoire as we've gone along and got more resources.
Right. You can't make Adventures in Jedi School for $50, but the new guy doesn't need a lot of production value.
Exactly, yeah.
Michael, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, go ahead. Okay.
Thank you again for coming on with us. This is the plug portion that I promised you at the outset. You've been putting some really great, well-produced stuff out there. Adventures in Jedi School, as I said. Anti-Heroes. I think, is The Stumbling Dead, is that the most recent?
You have successfully named all of the high-budget series that I had nothing to do with. Well done.
But how about Rom.com? Is that one?
No, you got me again.
Okay. All right, great. Well, then maybe you could tell our audience.
I mean, I was heavily involved in the process and love all those shows. But for me personally, since this is my interview,
right.
I plug Welcome Back Potter, a Harry Potter parody we did, and Starship Icarus, which great horror comedy author David Wong and I co-wrote. The sci-fi one, aforementioned. But yeah, right now, what I'm basically working on, which I'm super excited about, is we, for a long time, have cleaved to the idea that our major releases, if you're going to put a lot of money on the table, need some kind of touchstone, like Harry Potter or Star Wars, in the case of Adventures in Jedi School, and so on and so on. And so it's usually pretty hard to convince the people, and rightly so, who handle the budgets that they should let you make a show about nothing. But as we all know, shows about nothing, like Seinfeld,
that would never be successful.
Can, right, end up being hugely successful if they're well executed, because they develop the following over time, and people just love the characters, and they don't care what the premise is, they just like those characters.
Right.
So that's hard to pull the trigger on, and I see why. But that's what Agents of Crack was, which remains one of my favorite things I've done. So now we're finally doing another thing, which I sort of consider the spiritual successor to that. For copyright reasons, we have gone through about 20 titles, but we finally landed on Internet Content. So it will be called Internet Content, because that is not taken yet. That's the name we're allowed to use. But that's our new show that I'm super, super excited about, and I'm actually going to go back to editing that as soon as we hang up here.
Can you talk about a release?
And one more thing. Sorry.
Oh, yeah,
sure. And I'm thrilled about. Alex Schmidt, the new guy, and I are about to launch a podcast on the, basically a book club on the works of Kurt Vonnegut. So we'll start with his first novel, Player Piano, and every episode, one a month, we'll go through all of his publications up to his death.
Oh, it's my favorite.
Yeah, it's going to be a blast. I'm really excited.
when, if you can give us like a month kind of time frame, can people expect to see that? Either internet content.
I can give you a fiscal quarter time frame.
There we go.
Anywhere between September and November. We're recording it next week, but because it's the pilot, we have to spend a lot of time arguing about, like, where the bumpers go, what is the structure of the show as far as how it's edited, et cetera, et cetera.
You can check out all of his stuff at crack.com, including the aforementioned Welcome Back, Potter, in which Michael portrays a in-the-future version of Harry Potter with some Hunter S. Thompson tendencies, mannerisms, let's say. Mike, do you have time for one escort mission question?
Absolutely. Okay. I love that show.
All right. This is really why I got into contact with you in the first place. Escort Mission is a series where Michael teaches his roommate the finer points of video gaming. Check it out. Have you been able to play No Man's Sky?
No. I'm still doing a Far Harbor expansion, and I actually posted a Twitter poll because I need to know. Have you played it?
Yes.
Okay, is it just like a technical marvel and then you're done after 4 hours, or is it a thing? Should I play it?
Well, it's a technical marvel that it feels to me similar to when Grand Theft... Like, I love the video that you put out about the Prime games, right? The list of those and everything else is sort of a derivative of that. I think that this... And yes, it is a technological marvel with not a whole lot underneath it. I'm thinking that they can then use that, put some money into it. I'm looking at you, LucasArts, and kind of make it more of a next step along the lines of what we're doing with virtual reality. So,
I got
my two cents.
I'll play that.
Are you working on new episodes of Escort Mission?
Yes, constantly. We have a Civ 1 in the works. We wrote one about Doom. And a couple other games. We also actually are in the works to launch a spin-off series where, so if for people who haven't seen it, the premise of Escort Mission is, we've decided now to retcon. Every Saturday night, these two roommates, the one who likes video games is allowed to dominate the living room for video game purposes, and that's the show you see. It's him explaining it to his friend who's forced to suffer through it. We want to launch a spin-off series where every Sunday night, Greg Burke, who plays the guy who doesn't know anything about video games, watches sports all night and explains it to me. So that's going to be Crack's new sports series, which you get, my acting will be easy in that because I don't know anything about sports, but I trust that it will be funny if you know about sports.
Is there any chance at an ending for The Startup, which is another one of my favorite series?
Yeah, there is a brutality to the world of, like, quickly producing many videos and seeing what sticks. And basically not enough people watched it, so it doesn't have any official backing. That said, the three leads, Cody Johnson, Katie Stoll, and I, love the show so much that we've all written scripts to wrap it up, and we plan on filming and editing those and seeing if Crack wants to release them, basically pro bono, for that exact reason, just because we don't want it to end on a cliffhanger. But that said, we've been working on that nominally for like 8 months, just because we're all producing the real videos, and then we go home and we're like, oh yeah, I told my pal I'd make an extra video. Tends to hit the back burner, but I bet that will come out someday.
One last question for you before we let you go.
Yeah.
What does Soren smell like?
Lavender and elderberry wine.
I knew it. I gotta buy some candles.
I had that written down. You see?
Frequently asked questions. Michael Swaim, everybody, of crack.com. You can check out all of his upcoming web series at crack.com. He's the senior video editor. I really appreciate the time, Michael.
Thanks so much, Kyle. Nice talking to you.
By the way, I emailed Brad about the logo, and he promised to get back to me soon.
Dope.
All right. All right. We'll be right back in just a minute to wrap things up. You're listening to Bluegrass Bios on Lexington Community. All right, welcome back to Bluegrass Bios on Lexington Community Radio. That's pretty much all the time that we have this week. I have to make a public apology to my co-hosts. I flipped out a little bit there at some point when Ben asked his third question about copyright law. That was really cool for me personally. I've been a big fan of his work, even if my jokes didn't land for the professional comedian. That's okay.
I think you're funny, Kyle.
Thank you for lying to me, Lexington.
I'm not trying.
That's all the time that we have this week. Tune in next Friday when we'll be joined by Kevin Patterson of The Beer Trap and KET's Tom Martin. Coming up next is Aging Adventures with Lydia Jacobs. You know what? I got one more thing for everybody. This is sort of a follow-up from last week. If you can make it, the Kentucky Fried Zine Fest is going on tomorrow at the Lyrics Theater from noon to 6, a showcase of do-it-yourself zines, comics, books, and paper art. Our beloved general manager, Chuck Clenny, will be there, so you can go out there and glad hand him if you're interested. I know I'll be there. So from all of us at Bluegrass Bios, have a great weekend, Lexington.
Thanks, you too.